Welcome.
Dan Levitard, if we're really being honest about it, it's just a giant piece of shit.
To the Big Suey.
Bald Eagles.
A podcast exclusive that none of our bosses asked for.
More sports.
More work. Less pay.
I haven't stopped talking in a month. I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
Just when you thought the show couldn't be more diluted. Bam.
Last time I listened to this show.
I haven't listened for years.
Now here's the marching band to nowhere.
Am I missing something? What am I missing?
The end of the story.
Fat face.
Chris Fallick.
It's Fallica. You made him a penis.
And the habitual liar.
I didn't ask for any of it.
You asked for all of it.
The Big Suey.
I'm Chris Cody, BSPN.
Doing something different for the Big Suey today, welcoming in someone that actually knows what they're talking about. Mina Kimes, tremendous friend of the show. As you know, she has what, for my money, is the best football podcast in America, The Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny. Mina, I know you're not a gambling person. If you listen to Levitard's show, Dan has been touting your gambling prowess. I think you're good because you're not exactly evaluating these games based off of point spread and who's going to really be the gambler's advantage, but you're damn good at this. I watch NFL live and I listen to your podcast for just insights, whether it be matchups to exploit. I'm making money off props just giving your breakdowns.
I haven't heard Dan tout my prowess on the show, but I know that he does because a listener to the show messaged my husband on Instagram asking for gambling advice from me. And what makes that even more exceptional is he didn't message me. Like, I checked my messages. There was not, I got nothing. He just went straight from my husband there, which was an interesting move. And my husband was like, what the hell is this? And I'm what, 15-2-1?
Have you given any thought to maybe gambling on some of these games? Or is this, I'm Mina Kimes, member of the mainstream establishment, NFL media, I can't be gambling on games?
You know, I already don't enjoy giving you guys advice because it adds, not because I don't want to help you or anything like that or have any moral compunctions. I just don't like having an added layer of investment in any football game, right? Because I don't even like playing fantasy for that reason. Like, I just want to watch the game and examine it and think about it critically and not want something to happen, which is what happens when you gamble. And I even feel that, like, when I give you guys my picks in the morning, then I'm stressed. I'm like, oh my God, are the Giants going to cover? And I don't want to care. I don't want to feel anything, but I do.
Well, let's actually bring one of our off-air discussions on the air and look at one of the league's best teams. Obviously, you mentioned it on your podcast. The marquee game this week is the Ravens and the Steelers. Both teams, obviously, yes. The main storyline here, 100% of the Cleveland Browns' losses this season at the hands of the Ravens and Steelers. Obviously, a great rivalry dating back to Smash Mouth football. It might be, even though the NFL's changed some, these are two outstanding defenses. Now, we were going back and forth, even though I ended up taking your pick when Sailor Lawan went out. I'm a little worried about Big Ben on the road. Over the last few years, this is a quantifiable thing. The home road splits are concerning. And even in that game, three picks, they lost a turnover battle by three and yet still win because Gostkowski misses that kick at the end. Is this cause for concern, or during a pandemic when you don't actually have full stadiums, maybe that's an outlier and I could just look at home Ben Roethlisberger, who's a different Ben Roethlisberger?
I tend not to focus on home road splits for individual players and think more about matchups. So for me, in this particular game, Big Ben versus the Ravens matchup is why he's more likely to struggle than he has this season, because I think the Ravens defense is fantastic. And they're built in a way that equips them to handle what the Steelers are doing on offense, which has really been interesting to watch, Mike, because Big Ben is like a different quarterback this year. Like, if you had told me 4 years ago that Ben would have the fastest release in football and like the lowest completed air yards per time, he's not the lowest, I think it's Garoppolo always, but he's not sending it deep, okay? Steelers fans get mad when I point out, it doesn't mean the offense is bad. It's just the way they're doing things. They have really good receivers to get yards after the catch. But in any case, You have to have a secondary that can play really physically at the line, press the receivers, play tight man coverage against them. And I think the Ravens do have one of the better secondaries in the NFL. They also just traded for Yannick Ngakoue. So I think up front, they'll be able to do some really interesting things. They blitz a lot, similarly to Pittsburgh. They might blitz a little bit less in this game or send five. It's a difficult matchup for Ben.
It doesn't have the marquee names, this Pittsburgh Steelers team, but this might honestly be one of the more talented teams Ben Roethlisberger has ever had. And maybe the Steelers fans take offense to that, because as long as number seven's back there, they're always going to have this vision of him in his mind. But this is a necessary evolution, not to point to the home road splits, but he was careless with the football. I think you said on Twitter that he's getting rid of the ball in less than 2.5 seconds, which for a guy that always chucks it downfield is really hard to do. So he had to change his game. How's this advantageous to what they do paired with that defense?
Well, he gets rid of the ball. Last week, it was 2.05 seconds, which is bonkers. Like, I know that it's like sometimes hard to put that kind of thing in context. Like, what's the difference between 2.05 and 3 or whatever? That's definitely the quickest of Ben Roethlisberger's career. I think it's the quickest of any quarterback this season. It is like lightning quick coming out. And then you're right. The receivers are awesome. Like Chase Claypool, who I keep trying to make Primus Time happen as a nickname, and no one is jumping on.
No, it's Mapletron.
But Primus Time is so much more clever.
He's Canadian. Mapletron.
Primus Time. Claypool. Primus. Prime Time. Triangulate. No?
He already said his nickname is Mapletron. He already said it.
Stupid.
He can pick his own nicknames. He's co-signed that.
Basically, because the defense is so good, they just need to not turn the ball over. I mean, this football game is probably just going to come down to which quarterback turns the ball over, you know?
And Big Ben's on the road, and he's coming off a game where he did that for three. I know you say
Lamar Jackson has struggled against the blitz all year, and now the best blitzing team in the NFL is coming to down.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's really what I want to focus on. Well, obviously, look, I don't like the Ravens, and I don't like the Steelers, and I've always been sort of anti-Roethlisberger and anti-Lamar Jackson. That is my fan bias. I wear it. I'm a homer. Even as he's winning the MVP, I'm like, well, do it in the playoffs. You can't, and I'll always hold that against him. It's how I cope with getting drubbed by these quarterbacks year in and year out.
But having a team that doesn't actually even make it to the playoffs.
Right, although that's changing this season. But I do think...
We'll see.
I do think... We'll get to that in a second. Has the NFL adjusted to Lamar Jackson? People are blaming the offensive coordinator, who in his career has worked with Kaepernick and got the most out of Kaepernick, has worked with Tyrod Taylor and got the most out of Tyrod Taylor. I know people are saying this offense is conservative and kind of boring to watch, but is that by design because of maybe some of the quarterback's limitations that he wasn't necessarily flashing last year when he won the MVP, but all of a sudden this year you said he's struggling against the blitz? That must mean that teams found a weakness in his game and are sending the blitz more often.
So last year, he was one of the best quarterbacks throwing against the blitz and one of the best quarterbacks throwing out of the pocket. So it's not like, you know, defenses woke up and said, let's make him throw. And all of a sudden, you know, he can't throw. He was just throwing the football better last year. He's never been, I don't think he is one of the best passers in the NFL by any stretch. I think but his ceiling is as a good passer, his floor rather. Like, he should be throwing better than he has. I think the regression we're seeing is complicated in Baltimore, and there's like a number of reasons. One is that he has been inaccurate, especially throwing deep. So that's on him. Another is defenses are playing them a little bit differently. I think they're really keying in on Mark Andrews in the middle of the field, which is Lamar's strength. But this Baltimore offense is the second cheapest offense in the NFL. They decided not to invest, right? And so they let a Hall of Fame guard, Marshall Yanda, retired. So the offensive line got a little bit worse. They didn't invest in wide receiver, which surprised me. They signed Des Bryant to the practice squad, but that doesn't really mean much. I actually think they really should trade for a veteran wide receiver, because after Mark Andrews and Hollywood Brown, who I don't personally think is a true number one, there's nothing. So I think that's an area where they're struggling because of how the roster is built in part too. And it's showing up on the field.
It seems as though they're going for this grinded out Baltimore Ravens identity of old, which is weird because he's one of the more exciting players. But you mentioned the trade deadline, and my private theory, and you're the one that has NFL sources, With the extra play, you do. You're connected.
I mean, I don't break news, but whatever. Okay.
You're mean a stream, though. Yeah, but
just
you're not
me
a
your, tell me your theory.
You're not a newsbreaker. But obviously, this year with the extra playoff spot in each conference, more teams are alive, so more teams should be going for it. So and teams want to save money next year, so we should see a more That's active true. Trade market, should we not?
I think there's the thought actually because the cap is likely to stay flat or whatever next year, some teams that should be buyers maybe won't be buyers out of concern. I don't know.
But my theory is because teams are trying to get rid of contracts that you'll see a trade market.
But then it's like, well, other teams are worried. It's all.
But there is a good amount of teams. But there is a good amount of teams with space.
Yeah, unfortunately, like a lot of the teams with space are the teams that are not competitive. So it's not, that doesn't align.
Everybody to the Browns, basically.
Yeah, but the Browns have space. Yeah. So I agree with you. I think because there's an expanded playoffs, more teams should be active buyers. And I hope that, like, for example, my Seattle Seahawks, my beloved Seahawks, I really hope that they add a pass rusher, which is something that they desperately need. And there's a few other teams with like very obvious holes. I think the Packers need a wide receiver, for example. There's a few sexy targets out there for them. So
who are these targets in the wide receiver market? Everyone goes to AJ Green. Is Adam Thielen a name? I've seen people start to tweet about Adam Thielen because the Vikings are out, but he's too good.
I'd be surprised if they traded Thielen. He's too good. I think Jameson Crowder is a really nice piece with the Jets. He's really good. So I think a lot of teams, including Baltimore, by the way, could use him if they're willing to part ways with him. And so you're going to hear names like John Ross, which is like not that great, Alshon, D.D. Westbrook, Curtis Samuel would be one of the better options, although Carolina is surprisingly feisty, so they might not trade him. Oh, Will Fuller is the other like sexy target.
Everyone's probably got to go to the top of the food chain in terms of money. In that NFC East, it feels as though one team is going to make an aggressive trade, even though they're probably a team that should be rebuilding, just because this division can be had.
Yeah.
Who is that team? Is it the obvious one?
Philly is the team that should win the division at this point. So, and they have some pretty clear holes on their roster. Although they're so weird. Like, it's honestly, it feels like Carson Wentz is determined to hook up with the least famous wide receiver or tight end possible every game. It's like, God, all the analogies I'm thinking of are really inappropriate. You know, like it's like the guy who always dates girls and you're like, really? All right. Like that's Carson Wentz. Like he's like the male celebrity who doesn't want to date a model. That was gross. What a weird analogy. I hated it the second it came out of my mouth.
Seahawks, your team. Historically, I don't know what's going on with the running backs, but it's sort of... I've had one of my hot takes in just watching the Chargers every week is they need to fire their training staff, which is mean, overly mean, but I don't understand how every year...
They've turned it over. They're cursed, man. They have changed.
Really?
Changes there.
So the people that are getting hurt now under this training staff, they did the thing that I was like on my couch saying they got to fire their training staff. Everybody's getting hurt.
They have turned it over the years. They're just so freaking cursed and unlucky.
So what is it about the running back position in Seattle?
That guys are getting hurt?
Yeah, Carson is injured again. And you can look, it's fine if like one individual player is hurt. But Penny is hurt. Travis Homer is hurt. Carlos Hyde, who still has a job because I guess he does some good things that maybe you could articulate. I'm not exactly sure what they are. He's got hamstring issues, and now DJ Dallas might actually get the start for you guys when he's like fourth or fifth on the depth chart. It just always seems like a problematic thing. When Travis Homer, who's primarily used as a special teamer, is getting counted on late in the season last year, and now you're turning to DJ Dallas, what is it about this position in Seattle?
This is great because you're just asking me questions that no one ever like.
There's no answer to it. I'm sorry.
Well,
you don't care. Yeah, it's inexplicable.
I mean, Chris Carson does have an injury. I think that's the notable one, and he has a pretty unique injury history, which is why they added Carlos Hyde, which people didn't love. But
let's keep it conversational. You know what? I'm not going to be question and answer, especially with impossible questions to answer. Mina, explain to me what Carlos Hyde does well.
I think he's a competent running back and who can pass, protect and
I assumed it was pass protection. That had to be because it has to be something not flashy that has kept him in the league this much. You know, he's a good pass protector.
Travis DJ Homer Dallas. Is a good pass protector, actually.
Travis Homer and DJ
he made
Dallas.
Some key blitz pickups against the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah. Have you been surprised by DJ Dallas's speed out there? Because he doesn't look, he's got a bit of a round face, but he's fast, sneaky fast.
What?
He's got a round face. He doesn't have the physique that you would think, like, oh, this guy's fast. Not the way that Derrick Henry.
Oh, yeah. A round face.
Yeah.
You know, right. Like, that is a quality when athletes have round faces.
Ezekiel Elliott.
You assume Matt Stafford, mm-hmm. round face, big face. Dwayne Haskins is a really round face, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And he has the athleticism to surprise you. Ezekiel Elliott.
Neither of those guys are actually that athletic.
Well, no, I'm talking about Ezekiel Elliott now. Oh. When he was at Ohio State, I remember when he was doing the crop top. I'm like, wow, I can't believe. Now he still does a crop top, even though he's not the same kind of chiseled. But he still has a round face and had the speed, at least in college. That was surprising associated with that face. DJ Dallas was not that fast as Ezekiel Elliott was in his prime. But he'll surprise you. I don't know why I'm devoting so much time to the fifth string running back, but that's making a surprise start other than being a Miami fan, but things to ponder. All right, let's move over to the Kansas City Chiefs because they're the Super Bowl champion, and every time they enter a game, I'm like, they're winning that game, and I was surprised to see that they lost to the Raiders. The Raiders played them well defensively. The Broncos didn't, but the Chargers did. What are teams doing different to the Kansas City Chiefs? To the Kansas City Chiefs that's actually making them lose games, because I'm always surprised whenever they lose a game.
Right. Well, they only lost one, right?
Yeah.
So, but defenses are doing something pretty similar, which is they're not blitzing. They're sending three or four, dropping a bunch of guys into coverage, playing soft zones primarily against Mahomes. They've kind of... So, you know, he's... Like, his ceiling is best quarterback of all time to me, but... One of his flaws is that he does tend to drift back in the pocket, which makes it harder to pass protect for him because the blocking angles change. So the offensive line, which has regressed a little bit this year, has struggled, and defenses have realized, okay, we don't even have to send that many guys. He's going to hold on to the football, and he's going to also always try to hit the home run instead of the single. And I think they're taking advantage of that a bit. One of the adjustments you've seen Kansas City make at the last couple of games is Mahomes has taken more checkdowns. They've been running the football more, which has been available to them because they face so many light boxes because of the strategy I just described in part. And so what happens in the end is you don't get these like super sexy Mahomes games, but they're kind of just grinding out wins in response to what defenses are giving them.
Are the Rams good? This was an on-air discussion that we had during a local hour earlier this week. I think the Rams are a good team, and then I just rail against like why it seems as though, because of First Take, we only call teams that we think are Super Bowl contenders good, and then everyone else is just not good. This is once again my Cleveland Browns fandom creeping back into it, because I get offended when they say they're not good. I'm like, they're 5-2.
Can we talk about this?
They're good.
Can we sideline the Rams conversation and talk about, because I feel like you work out a lot of your frustrations with First Take mm-hmm. on me.
Yeah.
And you'll text me and say, like, why are you leading tomorrow's show with is Baker a fraud? And I'm like, we're not. Mm-hmm. The Steelers are undefeated. We're obviously going to talk about the Steelers. And you're like, but on Friday, I saw this, and this. But you saw it on First Take. Mm-hmm. And I'm not on First Take.
Yeah.
So I feel like I've become a weird proxy in your life.
Because you're part of the establishment media now. You used to be on the outside with the NFL expert that was co-hosting. But Highly
Around the Horn is like a...
No one takes the opinions on Around the Horn or Highly Questionable seriously. But on Get Up and First Take, they do. Come on, those are comedy shows. Everyone's just waiting for the C block for the viral videos. Let's go ahead and see everybody react to someone getting punched in the balls. We all know what Highly Questionable is all about. I don't go there for my NFL breakdown. All right, but... I do go to First Take and I do go to Get Up and I get offended. And then, yeah, that's right. You on NFL Live, you guys do a different show, but you play into the same tropes. Don't pretend like you don't, because I see it all the time. Swagoo hates Baker Mayfield. He hates him.
He doesn't hate Baker Mayfield.
He hates Baker Mayfield. Oh, come on. He hates him. He hates them. There's an agenda. There's a clear campaign against the Cleveland Browns and Baker Mayfield just because you guys aren't creative enough to make your own television.
Orlovsky likes Baker Mayfield.
He does?
He always is posting clips praising
him. Yeah, but he also
him.
Likes Carson Wentz, famously. That's true. And that's yeah. I'm not crazy about Carson Wentz, as you made
it's
such a great
analogy.
That's
the company you want to be in, I guess.
Before. All right, look. We'll circle back to everything else. Let's address the Browns, because everything that I'm saying is obviously drenched in that sort of homerism. I believe them to be good. Here's why. Because they have five wins. And they don't ever have five wins, Mina. Everyone wanted to push the quarterback out the door when he's the best quarterback they've had in 30 years. So, of course, I'm going to look at him and say, I don't want to get rid of Baker Mayfield right now. Why would I want to get rid of the best quarterback I've had? Let's give him more time. So I would be deeply offended whenever I watch it. The look on your face right
what?
Now.
What?
Your head is in your hand. Are you nursing a hangover? What's going on? I'm boring you.
No.
Okay.
No.
I'm not going to do it. We're not going to talk.
The Browns are fine. They're well coached. How about that? They're a well coached team.
You were always touting Stefanski to me.
I was. And I was right. Was I not right?
Yeah.
Before the season, saying he would be a good coach.
Yes, he's a he's a tremendous coach, and he's obviously, you see game over game him getting better in a way that you didn't see with Freddie Kitchens, obviously.
You know what I like about the Browns this year? So, like, they got their asses handed to them by Pittsburgh, right?
Yeah.
Disaster, right? Horrible game. Baker's a fraud on all the establishment media, sports programming the next day.
There you go. I like that you're calling it that.
Establishment media sport. I almost did ESPN. Establishment sport.
Well, they're part of the problem.
And you know what? You know what I liked? It was normal in Brea. Like, Baker Mayfield was normal. The press conferences were normal. Kevin Stefanski handled it. Like, there was no weird, like, last season there would have been like a circus and weird anonymous quotes, and like, it was just like a normal football team losing a game. And then you rebounded and had a win, and Baker had his best performance of the season.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I like about the Browns this year. They are like a normal football team.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It
like, there's
does.
No,
well, not when you view it through the prism of this being the Browns. It doesn't make sense that things are normal right now. But it's Stefanski. He actually owns up to his mistakes. And Freddie would too, but you could tell it was just bull coming out of Freddie because he was just saying.
And he had like substitute teacher vibes, yeah. Right? Where it was like total chaos. Like, Stefanski seems like the real teacher who's been there for 10 years and like is like, all right, kids, settle down.
Yeah.
Which is weird because he's so young, but I think he's got, you know, he's got the goods.
He's got the goods, dude. My wife still has no idea what the bottom of his face looks like because he's so disciplined. He's not doing the thing where he's pulling it off to yell at people because he's not yelling. He even said after that game, I got to do a better job of getting Baker Mayfield comfortable. Now, part of that might just be not having Odell Beckham Jr. there, but giving him rhythm throws. So let's talk about the Odell Beckham thing, but let's please try to do this. I know the hot take is Baker Mayfield might be better, and I know I'm the person that might have been texting you this privately. Get him out of here.
So much. So many texts about this.
But why is it? I've heard, the best theory that I've heard so far was from Jake Burns of the Orange and Brown Report. It's a film
that
break.
Guy's good. Yeah, I follow him a lot.
Yeah, he does a great breakdown, and he's like, okay, let's look at the two quarterbacks that Odell has famously played with. As you rub your eyes again, I think I'm bothering you.
No, sorry.
I'm not bothering you?
I'm listening. I'm dialed in.
You know, I get a lot of shit on the Reddit about being annoying, talking fast when I get excited, and you're just projecting
The Levitard
vibe.
Reddit man from him?
No, not from Mark.
He's so positive.
Mark's fine, even though he's created this unholy monster. But I just see all the posts dedicated to how annoying I am just written all over your face right now.
Will they do a post about this episode?
Probably. And just
if you're listening, make it positive and just fill it with comments about how much you love Mike.
No. I do like listening. Those. Those honestly make me feel a little bit better.
Do it.
They're hurtful.
Do it, guys. Do it for him.
No, but I deserve this one.
If you made it this far in this podcast, just
it's
do
been
it.
Bad.
And,
it's been bad. Quite honestly, like, you've just been not feeling it. I'm sorry. I feel like I dragged you out of bed.
This podcast?
Yeah.
No.
This podcast has
been
bad.
It's been good.
I feel like I'm boring. Every time I look into the Zoom, your head is in your hands. Are you rubbing your eyes? Or you just seem like,
yeah.
Like, why am I?
It's morning here, but my voice is. I've been engaged.
Mina Kimes, you've changed.
You broke the illusion for, like, nobody was listening to this, thought that, and now that you revealed how I look,
You've changed.
You've completely changed the vibe.
Last year, I would turn to you for football advice because I respect you in the same manner. I always have respected you as the... You are my guiding light when it comes to NFL takes. You have been for years. But when I would look at you all doughy-eyed, like, explain to me why this is good. Explain to me why this is bad. You would look me in my eye and take the time out to really answer my question.
What was that baby voice?
Because that's how doughy-eyed Mike, who's not a football savant, who... forms his opinion based on what other smart people say, like on the Mina Kimes show featuring Lenny. You guys,
why did it have a stutter?
Yeah, because I'm just a little boy and I don't.
No, stop it! Never do that again.
I'm just a little boy and I don't know.
No, no, stop! It's.
I don't know. I don't know why. Why is Baker Mayfield good when he's targeting Hollywood Higgins?
Mike, I feel like this is offensive.
What? Yeah, just a little baby voice. It's just a little baby. Offensive to babies? Okay, Jesus. You're proving my point.
You need to see the accent coach, and he needs to give you a better check Joe out that mystery fan voice.
Check out that mystery crate. If you're like,
yeah, great, best episode of all time.
Yeah, where we finally, I'm gonna repost that, where we finally help you with your voices,
classic.
And we bring on a voice dialect coach to teach you. Okay, what I was trying to say is Jake Burns' theory. So let's look at the two quarterbacks that Odell's played with primarily. You're laughing in my face right now. It's Eli Manning and Baker Mayfield. Obviously, what's different? One's way taller than the other, right? And the other one doesn't move around at all. Eli Manning had a decent pocket presence, especially when you compare it to what the book is on Baker Mayfield, which is he's got a bit of the happy feet, which is obviously cause for concern. How does that play to Odell Beckham Jr.? Jake Burns' theory is, well, Baker Mayfield is short. He has batted balls at the line. He has a lot of tip ball interceptions for a quarterback. And he's not taking advantage of what was one of Odell's best plays in New York, which is that quick slant house call.
Yeah.
He's not even seeing it or trusting himself to throw it over the line. So there goes a large chunk of Odell's big yardage production, because I believe with Cleveland, he's only had 200-yard games. In fact, one of those 100-yard games, he takes advantage of the slant because Greg Williams is an idiot. And he takes it to the house on that Monday Night Football game where you're like, okay, finally, this is a natural thing. It should work. Also, Eli Manning, in terms of weapons, Odell Beckham, his only weapon. What's with the face right now? What are you doing?
I just got some NFL news from an insider, which I know I just said I'd never get, but yep, here we go. Wait, did it break already?
Well, this is going to air after.
The Seahawks are trading for Carlos Dunlap.
Oh,
for nothing! Yeah!
No, no, that's very exciting. I got Carlos Dunlap put his house on the market publicly after losing to the... All right, so how does this help? Never mind what I was saying about...
Seattle had no pass rush. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you watched the Seahawks. That literally just traded nothing for him.
Yes! Yes!
What was it, a seventh? A sixth?
I don't know if it's public yet.
All right. Well, that's a good move. We're taping this on Wednesday afternoon. The other thing that's different, I'm droning now. The other thing that's
Keep going, keep going.
The other thing that's different about Baker Mayfield, obviously the happier feet, where Eli Manning would just hang tough in the pocket and wait for Odell to do one of those double moves or just come open. Baker is a little bit antsier at getting him the ball, sometimes rushes it. You're smiling. You're still happy about Dunlap? Is that what it is?
Yeah. You know, I'm listening. Yes, I am.
Which
happy
is why
about Dunlap, but
he looks inaccurate when he's targeting Odell Beckham and not inaccurate when he's targeting literally anyone else.
The slant thing makes a ton of sense, and I've never heard that. So shout out to Jake, I guess. Jake Burns. That's a really good theory, because I actually think that is something that has obviously been missing. And that's an issue. Like, you don't... Okay, so... Who calls Baker Mayfield? Oh, my friend Nate Tice calls him unathletic Russell Wilson. Just not very nice.
I'll take it.
But one thing you notice is Russell Wilson doesn't throw that either, right? Like, when you're watching the Seahawks offense, you very rarely see that quick slant over the middle. It is a true thing that short quarterbacks, it's harder for them to make that throw. Russell Wilson obviously does literally everything else really well, so it doesn't matter. But that theory makes sense in terms of, like, why Baker and Odell in particular might not be connecting. Orlovsky said the other day on NFL Live, which you guys should catch on 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. I'm on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Fridays. That while, like, the chemistry thing can be kind of overblown, when he was in Detroit, sometimes Matthew Stafford's game would suffer because he felt like he had to throw it to Megatron. And you actually did see the, you know, like, what did Bill Simmons call it? The Ewing effect. Like, when Megatron was gone, Stafford did become a better quarterback at playing within the structure of the offense. So I think that is a real thing that can happen with a quarterback, especially, I think, like, you know, Megatron is much better than OBJ. I mean, he's like one of the greatest of all time, but especially if, as you said, like, there are certain routes that OBJ is good at that Baker is not well positioned to throw.
I was listening to the Rebuild podcast, which is another great Cleveland Browns podcast. You were actually on that 2 weeks ago when Baker Mayfield was the big talking point, and you had a nice rational discussion. But on this week's episode, everyone's running with this that Baker's just so clearly better without Odell Beckham Jr. But in recent weeks, the Cleveland Browns rushing attack has suffered a little bit, and obviously you can tie that to Nick Chubb, but everyone's just go ahead and is running with this, okay, they're not going to feel the impact of this Odell Beckham Jr. injury too much. I tend to disagree. Odell Beckham Jr. still commanded a safety, and Odell never really got credit for being one of the best downfield run blockers in the league. He's actually spectacular at it at that position. This is going to hurt Cleveland. How could it not?
Yeah, Odell's also incredible with the ball in his hands, right? Like, you saw that in the Cowboys game when he had the two end-arounds. So anytime you send him in motion or you have him on the field, he's a threat, and Stefanski's really good at using him to create space for other players. Stefanski's like a very good play caller in that way, and does a lot of the, you know, he comes from the Shanahan tree where he takes a player, and just because he's not involved in the play doesn't mean he's not crucial to, you know, why another wide receiver is wide open. It's not just like, oh, the DBs are doubling that player, they're distracted by him. He specifically is very good at sequencing run and pass plays together, using the players on the field to create space. So there's no doubt that they'll suffer for it. Again, like, you know, like you're saying, like, I do think there is a reasonable case that Baker Mayfield is better when he's not throwing to him, though, for the, you know, that's, it's not a hot take, frankly. But there's no, you don't lose a player like OBJ and not suffer in some hidden ways as well.
Cleveland's got a monster game with Las Vegas. This was a huge game that they won against Indianapolis because it's one of those teams that they're battling with for those final playoff spots. Like, it's not just winning the game, right, Mina? It's pushing a team like the Raiders down, which seemingly are going to be in it at the end, competing for that final playoff spot. If Cleveland wins this game with an all-important bye week after it, you could legitimately have the playoff discussion with the Cleveland Browns. I mean, people are legitimately having it now, but for real, odds-on favorite then to make the playoffs if they win this game.
This is a big game. I don't have the... We have a chart, I think 538 does it, where they show like the playoff swing implications for every individual game. But these are two teams that are wild card contenders, right? Like, undoubtedly in the AFC. So I imagine that it probably does have a pretty big impact on both, especially if there's like a head-to-head ramification. I think the Raiders are interesting because like I actually think their defense is not good, but I think their offense has the ceiling of being one of the top 10 offenses in the NFL.
It's kind of bizarre that Derek Carr is the best Raiders quarterback ever.
And the Raiders fans, like, hate him.
Hate him. But statistically, well, he's the greatest quarterback they've ever had.
So I found something in football that fans, like, tend to hate quarterbacks who don't take risks. Like, fans really just don't like conservative quarterbacks, even if they're efficient. And what's been really frustrating about Derek Carr for people is, of course, his aversion to throwing downfield. However, over the last couple of games, he has aired it out a bit, and it's Henry Ruggs, Nelson Aguilar, who knows, but I would not be surprised if they test Cleveland secondary that is challenged.
Oh yeah. Cleveland secondary is real bad. There's obviously no safety help. And this is where I want to bring back once again, I'll just make it self-centered, where you're egging Chris Mortensen on to drag me, even though I did the thing where I sent out three tweets simultaneously, and the third tweet said, they're not going to trade J.J. Watt, the Houston Texans. I'm just going out here with a fantasy take, which is, I don't think the game-changing safety or corner is available out there, and clearly, there is some stuff in Earl Thomas's life that has made him, like, just too hot to touch right now, which is a shame for a team like Cleveland and a team like Dallas that have severe needs, could absolutely use what Earl Thomas could give them, and they're still not making it when the likes of Antonio Brown are getting signed. It leads you to worry about what's going on there. I don't think that impacts safety outside of Earl Thomas or corner is out there. So why not just go all in to what Cleveland's already kind of been, which is we got a terrible defense. The only two players that we've got really on defense are the two top five picks in Denzel Ward, who, even though it's a bad defense, he's actually playing kind of well, and he made some really spectacular plays against Cincinnati, and Myles Garrett, obviously. So why don't we just lean into all the way, like, let's just make turnovers happen. Let's just go broke for big turnovers. So that's why I'm saying you're not going to find the impact player in the secondary. Just put a monster opposite of Myles Garrett, which is something they were trying to do with Jadeveon Clowney. And then I said J.J. Watt, and then, I mean, everyone laughed at me.
Which part of that would you like me to address?
That was a bit of rambling and incoherent. Yeah, but really bad. You've thrown me off my game many times.
I you know what? I respect that you are, you text me all this stuff and like kind of your crazy takes. And I'm like, part of me is like, I should expose this to the world and show how crazy Mike Ryan is. But then you also tweet them. So it's not like there's not two personalities. There's not two sides. To this going, like, you are fully yourself.
This is where this is where you've changed Mina Kimes. I was never made to feel stupid before, but now I'm made to feel stupid.
No, I respect it, because okay, so I'm on like Seahawks group chats where I say things that if they were aired in public, it would not be good for my career, right?
Stars are just like us.
But my personal, yeah. So there's definitely a public private divide, but there's no divide for you. You are fully. Fool yourself.
Yeah. I'm authentic, despite what the Reddit might think. So what can the Browns do to address this terrible defense? That's the only part that I really wanted you to address, and you didn't.
Yeah. They could absolutely be buyers, but they need help at every level on the defense. I think you could see them targeting, you know, another defensive end, as you've suggested. J.J. Watt. Maybe a little unrealistic, but
Olivier Vernon's a bit of a disappointment, huh?
Vernon's been a disappointment, yeah. Because you know, Ogunjobi's still good against the run.
He's been hurt. He's been hurt, which will help. Obviously, Richardson. Greedy Williams coming back has been hurt. They would try to address the safety with Delpit, and I don't think you can count on ever getting anything from Delpit, being that he's got that Achilles injury. Sheldrick Redwine's frustrating, but he's got some of that big play potential where he's like a ball hawk, which at this point, I don't care if you're terrible. You can't get much worse than the worst defense. Just go for broke and play. But they need to do something about the safety, and I think the most plausible thing is just get to the quarterback quicker because that helps everybody.
I would look at teams. I mean, you just kind of look at the bad rosters now. Like, I don't think the Jets are going to trade Marcus May, but he's a good safety. Good young safety, and the Giants, they actually traded for Logan Ryan or no, they signed him actually. But they, I don't think they're going to be a seller. They might. Yeah.
Bring back Jabril Peppers.
What'd you say?
Bring back Jabril Peppers.
Oh gosh. Yeah. Maybe it's time.
Fiery leader. I thought he was going to be worse than he turned out to be, especially in New York.
He's not bad.
No.
Yeah, I think the other thing though is like, when is this podcast coming out?
Well, now tomorrow, because the Dunlap news is obviously going to be the main talking.
You get the real time reaction. I think the trades are going to happen now, and like this might be moot a little bit because teams want to get the trades done as soon as possible this year because of COVID, because they want to bring guys in for not this coming Sunday but the following Sunday. So we're probably going to see a flurry of news like Thursday and Friday.
Well, then I got to get this podcast out as quickly as possible.
And into the hands of the Browns decision makers.
Mina, I don't think this podcast has been very good, so we're going to talk about TV in a second, but I do want to get you at least invested in one thing, one football-related thing, and clearly I'm not tickling your fancy, although I made it uncomfortable by saying that. What are you into in terms of the NFL, just so I can get you invested in this podcast today?
I am invested in this podcast. How dare you? I mean, the Bucks are probably the best team, which is really weird, I would say. The Bucks, and I mean, we seem to be careening towards a Bucks-Chiefs Super Bowl.
The Bucks look like the Patriots, and the Patriots look like the Bucks. And when Tom Brady forgot what down it was, I was like, okay, now the wheels are going to fall off. This is the aging quarterback. His head coach doesn't back him up publicly. And then the head coach goes out and signs Antonio Brown.
Yeah, and then says that Brady wasn't involved, which is such a lie. Sorry, I don't want to, maybe it's not a lie. We're not allowed to, you know, I don't know. It seems unlikely when you walk that back. The Bucs basically, like, okay, so let me ask you this. What is, every time Tom Brady's in the Super Bowl, which has been like every year, right? Except for like 2 years. And then you guys do your signature, what's the key to stopping, what is it?
What's the biggest single key that the Patriots have to do to beat the Falcons?
What does everybody always say?
Get to the quarterback?
Specifically.
I mean, get to Tom Brady. Force him.
With four. Rush Brady
with four. With four.
Right? Like everyone, literally, you can go back to your sound montages from all of those years, and I guarantee you half of the people. I'm pretty sure that's what I said on the zip line in
pressure
Minneapolis.
With four. The Bucs defense, by the way, does a great job of getting pressure with four, even though they have some good pass rushing linebackers out there.
So, yes, they're great. But with Brady, right now, if you don't pressure him, you're screwed. Like, he is playing unconsciously. Like, in the last game against the Raiders, who you're about to play, he was pressured on 3 of 43 dropbacks. Okay, that's so bonkers. Like, he is unbothered. And it's not just that he's getting the ball quickly. He's not getting it out as quickly as Roethlisberger. Like, their offensive line is playing really well, right? His splits, however, when you go like pressured versus non-pressured, are dramatic. He turns into a different quarterback. You saw that in the Bears game.
Yeah, where he was so visibly frustrated with Khalil Mack and kind of being a bad
angry.
Teammate. Yeah, kind of being a bad
teammate.
Yeah,
he was yelling at his offensive line.
Yeah,
like,
it was a bad look.
He was yelling at what has been the best pass protecting offensive line in football, by the way. Like, he is the least pressured quarterback in the NFL. So anyways, my point is, they look unstoppable, but if you actually have a defense that can get to Brady, like the Bears did, you can stop them. But unfortunately, there are very few defenses in the NFL that are built that way right now.
Sweet. So in the Super Bowl, J.J. Watt on one side, Myles Garrett on the other. I think we can get to him and make some things happen. I should have led with, what are you invested in? I should have asked you. This is my fault as a interviewer, and hopefully I can redeem myself with the David Samson show coming up here momentarily. That's right. Twice the annoying mic. Let's talk about The Bachelorette, because
I've enjoyed this. And the problem is, you know, when you say that it's so negative, now people believe that. Listen, speaking directly to the Reddit, and I know you've got, I told you earlier to do a thread about how great Mike is, but now can you do a thread about how you actually liked this episode? I'm going to look for it on levitardreddit.com.
Man, I don't know.
Or reddit.com levitard. I don't know.
I kind of feel like you're effing with me now. I kind of feel like you're making fun of me.
Just be like, what a great episode. Love Mike and Mina. Killer combination. Chemistry off the charts.
You sound
truly the Myles Garrett and JJ Watt of podcasts.
I felt like we used to have good on-air chemistry, and I don't feel that at all. But let's. We were good the last segment. We were good the last segment with the Bucks topic, which you were invested in. You just weren't. It was the first time this entire podcast you weren't literally rolling your eyes at me the entire time I was speaking.
It was we were talking about something realistic and not
we were talking about things realistic. The Browns making the playoffs is a realistic thing. Being a different quarterback than Eli Manning, and why that might explain what's going on with Odell Beckham Jr. This is that is grounded in real tangible stuff.
You're right. I used the word realistic when what I should have said is interesting. to like a broad audience. To broad, like I'm sorry, Sheldrick Redwine. Let's
no, the, no, the guy's Sheldrick. Look, man, this I didn't even start with the Browns. I started with what your podcast, Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny, started with, which is Ravens.
Yeah,
Steelers.
I was passionate about that. That game's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, I was catering to you because you're like, we're gonna start every time. I'm like, yeah, put some respect on Baker's name. And you're like, we're starting with the Steelers. So I thought, as a tip of the hat to you, I'd start with the Steelers. And
I thought that part was great.
Let's talk about The Bachelorette, which I'm watching. You're famously a Bachelorette and Bachelor fan. This is my third season that I'm watching. Full disclosure, I watched the Juan Pablo season because someone I went to high school with named Chantel was in that season. She didn't last very long. And then Bibby is a good friend of mine. And what season was her Bachelor? I forget the name.
Ari's. That's weird that you've known two people on the show.
It's Miami. Everyone knows like at least two contestants. I kind of feel like I know the guy from Miami in this season as well. But
which guy is from?
The guy that looks like he's a Bosa brother.
Oh, yeah. Ed?
Is he Ed? He might as well be Ed. We'll see. We'll see when the new Bachelorette comes
in. Do you know anyone? Is there anyone in like the Levitar universe who we think could be a contestant on the show?
Golic.
And why is it Tony?
No, because Tony's married. Was before the whole pandemic thing came down, wasn't Mike Golic supposed to do The Bachelor, was supposed to go on the road, and Mike Golic Jr. was supposed to be a bachelor for like a specific Northeast region?
But I mean like really on the show, like on like an actual contestant.
Well, I have noticed that there aren't a lot of everymen on this show, which is a bit frustrating.
You have to have at least eight abs, to be honest.
Yeah, which is, I thought Yosef brought up a lot of good points, because... Here's why. And yes, Yosef, terrible person. Horrible messenger. But his message, I was a little offended by the dodgeball thing. And am I viewing this through my prism, which is like, man, you're gonna make me get naked around these like physical specimens when I've got 15 additional pounds of pandemic weight on me right now? That's not fair. You're not doing this on The Bachelor. You're not. You're not making the girls strip down to their underwear. It's degrading.
They've done stuff like that.
Really?
The Bachelor. Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
losers get completely naked?
Like bikini stuff. Not naked. But you're right. It is. It's totally. It was, you know, that Onion meme, heartbreaking, the worst person you know just made a good point. That's how I felt. Because the dude started, he was like, you know, I didn't like, you know, it felt like, I was like, all right. And then he was like, and I'm ashamed to be associated with you and you would be a terrible mother. I was like, it was so weird. It was like
he was repeating his point. So, look, spoiler alert, if you didn't watch,
dialing it up.
Yeah, he was dialing it up. So he was carrying over this thing from a previous competition that he didn't take part in. He just saw a bunch of like naked guys walking back,
which also
to the crib. Yeah. I know. And he was like, all of a sudden, this guy who was purported to be a bit of a player. That's how we were introduced. Like, he's
not just purported.
Girl.
So the internet. I've done some digging, and he has sent videos of his. What's the word? That Wang? Can we use Wang?
Yeah, you can.
He has sent videos and photos of his Wang to women on the internet. So that's the character where
his daughter must be really embarrassed. So all of a sudden he becomes dad of the year in the next episode and decides, I'm gonna confront Claire, who is, by the way, side note, I don't know if you knew this about Claire, the oldest bachelorette ever. I'm gonna go confront Claire about how this is a really terrible look. And how I wouldn't have been comfortable with it, even though I wasn't a part of it, because it's a bad example for my daughter. So, okay, maybe he just wants to make a certain impression. He starts repeating his point about his daughter three times, and you realize there's not much more to this take. Then Claire, in true Claire fashion, tries to make it about herself, mentioning her mom is dying, and that's when Yosef starts mentioning the thing about his daughter and how he doesn't want to be an embarrassment to his family and you're the oldest bachelorette ever. I'd expect more from you. And he starts repeating that six times and then it gets ugly. And then Claire is probably, she's talking about Dale a lot, obviously, but this is all producers doing work, right? They're absolutely amplifying the Dale
angle.
Yeah,
so the thing about the show you have to realize is like the order in which things are happening is probably not the order in which they happened. Like there, for example, there is a audio of Claire being like, my fiance Dale or whatever. If you don't see someone's face saying something, it could have been said at any time in human history. And so like in that particular confrontation, the camera's all, it's not like a single shot, right? The camera's all over the place. You have no idea how long it lasted, how many times one person said one thing or the other. All I know is that the dude sucks. Like he was, he started with a great point and then it quickly spiraled into like, oh my God, this is like one of, like it's the kind of person who, it's like when people yell at you on the internet and you're like, you would never say that in real life. He's the dude who actually says it in real life.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just shocking.
Yeah. But if they reverse the order, say that confrontation happens at the end of the episode, and I know it's hard because much of the behavior that we saw from Claire for the remainder of the episode might have been born from this altercation she had with Yosef. But if you put that at the end of the episode, everyone's going to be cheering on Yosef. Like, yeah, she deserves it. She's been terrible to all these guys, playing them like a fiddle because she's just out here getting it in with Dale.
I think he was so over the top that I don't think people would have been on his side.
So you don't
unless
like my
they
take
only
that he
showed
be...
like 30 seconds of him being like, you're disrespectful.
Yeah.
But it,
so you don't like my take that he should be the next Bachelor.
He does look like like George Sedano.
He does.
Which is not great for George. I mean, not because he's not good looking, but because he's such a terrible person.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not George. George is fine.
Dan doesn't watch The Bachelor, right?
No. Even now that he's married, I don't think Valerie's making him watch it. I wanted to watch this one because because Chantel was on the Juan Pablo season and Claire was on the Juan Pablo season. I was like, I liked Claire in that season. There were some problems that I had with her, but this could be interesting. Well, it's the oldest Bachelorette ever.
They're making the switch soon, so yeah.
Right. Who's this new Bachelorette? Because they showed her and I was made Tayshia. Because I was made to feel stupid, like I have this entire podcast with you, because they showed a woman getting out of a pool in a bikini. And they never actually put a graphic up there, and I was supposed to know who this person was, and I had no idea.
Yeah, it's like, you know, like the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, you already have to know all the characters and who they are, and they're not going to give you a ton of exposition when they come in. She was on Colton's season. Nice, kind of.
I don't know what that means, Colton.
Yeah, I know. We should do, you remember the Outsiders podcast we did? I feel like that was the smash. People really love that. We should do another.
We should do that again. We should get a show that you're watching, that Dan is watching as well.
Yeah, like we did Big Little Lies. That was great. That was a great podcast.
Well, he's starting to watch. I'm sorry about that. I'm playing with something because I have a bunch of nervous energy because you made me feel self-conscious. I really love Ted Lasso. I would love to do a Ted Lasso.
Love Ted. Let's do a Ted Lasso. Everybody loves that show.
You love Ted Lasso? We haven't talked about Ted Lasso.
Come on. Have you encountered a single person who doesn't like that show?
Not a single
in
one.
Dan
is
literally
the
every person on earth loves that show.
Yeah, I'm going to bring in Dan real quick right now because he just wandered into the studio. We're taping this in between the radio show and Highly Questionable. Dan is the only person that I know that has watched one episode of Ted Lasso and hasn't gotten around to the rest.
What? Oh my God. How did you restrain yourself?
I will tell you why it is, okay? And this is a plague in my life, unfortunately, as I try to catch up with all of you guys in terms of streaming and digital, and I fall helplessly behind. I don't have the Apple Plus subscription, and I'm afraid that if I sign up for the free trial, I'm going to end up with costs that get buried in my bills that I never look at again. And Apple Plus, I only go there one time and never again. So if Ted Lasso is going to make me pay the monthly service and sign up and do all of this, this has to happen to other people. I can't be the only one that this happened to.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I signed up for CBS All Access for Love Island, and I'm pretty sure that's going to cost me like $100 a year.
I signed up for CBS All Access for the Key and Peele. What were they doing?
Jordan Peele, and it's just Apple TV. You don't have to call it Apple Plus. It's my grandfather's own time.
The Jordan Peele The Twilight Zone on CBS. What is it called?
For the longest time, I thought he thought that Jordan Peele's first name was Kian. Jordan Peele has a Twilight Zone. And I'm only this is going to happen to me a year from now. Someone gifted me an Apple TV as a housewarming present. And with an Apple TV, you get a year's worth subscription.
You got to put it on your calendar. Cancel CBS Access. Whenever I sign up for something, I go to my Google Calendar and I put cancel it in a month to remind myself
I told Valerie, set an alarm, Valerie. Set an alarm for 7 days. 7 days from now to make sure that we cancel that CBS All Access subscription. Because I only saw one Key and Peele episode on CBS. What's it called? And it's not called Apple Plus.
Oh, no, no. It's also not called CBS Plus. It's CBS
All have different
Access.
Names.
Yeah, I thought, wait a minute. So Apple Plus and Apple TV are the same thing.
There's no Apple Plus.
There's no Apple Plus.
What would I go to Apple Plus for?
There's no Nothing. Apple Plus. It's
it
just
doesn't
Apple
exist.
TV.
You're thinking of ESPN Plus.
Yes. There's Disney Plus and ESPN Plus.
The Apple has a plus on it. I'm going to send it to you guys when I get home. The When I get home, I'm going to show you guys that there is a plus somewhere on that Apple.
I feel like Cuomo to LeVar Ball. That is not a thing.
Dan. While we've got you. Am I the greatest gambler in the history of football
Holy
or simply
shit,
the greatest
Mina.
Gambler this season?
No, Mina. Like, listen, it's not just I've told people, I don't know how much you guys talked about this, but 15-2-1 is insane. And as I've told people on the radio, she keeps taking games I would never take. Like, I would not have bet Carolina against the Saints. I'm terrified of the Saints offense. I know, but I wouldn't have bet that. You've bet on the Giants a couple of times this season. I don't know why. The only two, I think the Giants have only covered two or three times, and you've bet on them each of the times they've covered. I don't know what your analysis is. Mike Ryan bet the Rams based on just your analysis of their running game.
Mike?
Yeah, I do props now based off of what her breakdown is. I don't say this just because she's my friend. I truly believe it. She is my favorite football voice. I learned so much from Mina.
I give you guys these picks and with no explanation. That's why it's amazing that you're listening to me. Because
it's informed.
Let's open the kimono a little. Every morning I wake up and the first text I wake up to on Sunday, because I'm on Pacific time, is from Dan and Mike Ryan saying, who you got, right? And then I just send them three teams, no explanation, typically, just like care, TB, LARM or whatever. And then I sit back and I stress because I'm stressed now about the streak. You've introduced an element of stress into my life. Like, I don't want to let you down.
Well, help me with this because the audience is now clamoring for this ever since I told them that you had been so good at it. And the one time that I said on air what you had given us, you gave us Atlanta over Green Bay, and Atlanta lost that game. So it's the only time, as far as our audience knows, you're 0-1. You're not 15-2-1. You're 0-1. And so now everyone's asking me. Chris wants the picks. Everybody publicly wants the picks. And as soon as we do that, it's going to go in the toilet.
No, it's only for you guys. I don't give them to anyone else. Although I do the picks on the ESPN page, and I went 13-for-14 this week.
So let's do it this way, because I'm starting to get a little superstitious, and I don't want to give away these picks either. But do the thing where you say, hey, thing to look out for tonight, they can exploit this matchup. You did that with Monday Night Football, the Rams and the Bears, and I was smart enough to bet the overs on the rushing the running backs there, the rushing overs, and I cashed.
Oh, you specifically bet? Wow.
Yeah, because you said Chicago can't stop the run, and this is what the Rams are doing very well. So I was like, every single running back I can get, I'm taking rushing yard overs. Give me a little nugget like that. What is something that we're going to see this football weekend that's an exploited matchup, and then I know which props to play?
I don't even have the schedule in front of me. Hold on. This is putting me on the spot here.
It really is putting you on the spot.
There's Ravens, Steelers.
I really don't like teams running the ball on the Saints. Oh, the Bears can't run the ball.
They can't run the ball at all. They've gone, four straight games under 65 yards. And it's the first time that they have had that happen in 50 years.
They're also missing that dynamism that Tariq Cohen would give. All too often, we don't really talk about injuries, which brings me back to my Cleveland Browns, because injuries are often used to point to, well, this is why they're struggling. Cleveland Browns, led by Kevin Stefanski, are winning in the face of some terrible injuries.
Everyone hates your Brown stuff. They get very mad at you.
Mina, Dan, thank you so much, by the way, because Mike was giving me S-H-I-T.
I gave her
all
guff.
Podcasts.
I gave her guff.
Because
I'll admit it.
She just said it was S-H-I-T, not G-U-F-F.
No.
She said it was S-H-I-T.
It was a four-letter word. It was guff.
It was S-H-I-T.
So he had me on to talk about football. He was asking about the Pittsburgh Ravens game is awesome, right? So I'm giving like my serious Steelers Ravens analysis. I've done a ton of prep on this game. And then like 15 minutes in, he perverts it into, he's like talking about JJ Watt to the Browns and the OBJ splits. And so I'm like going along with it. And he's like, you don't look very into this podcast. You have a very negative Nancy face. And I'm like, well, because no one wants to listen to you talk about Shelby Grant. I like the Browns. And then it somehow became about me being a negative Nelly. Clearly, that's not the problem.
And you're, a guff giver. And a guff giver. Don't forget that.
Did you have enough time to look over the schedule, Mina?
Hold on. Mike, will you quit trying to get money out of her and just let me ask her a question? Mina, do you watch film? Are you a film watcher?
Yes.
Because I don't think there have been very many people at the history of the network in an analysis role who will sit there and drop in commentary outside of the actual football players, something like the phrase split safeties. So you actually watch film. I assume the reason I trust your gambling picks is because I assume that you're unusually informed.
You said bracket coverage once. I was like, damn, she knows.
First of all, Orlovsky watches way more tape than I do. But we zero in on which matchups and games we want to talk about. And if I know we're talking about something, I will watch because I want to be informed. So like going into this Bears game, over the weekend, I watched a ton of the Bears defense, ton of the Rams offense, that kind of thing.
And so now, based on all of your information, this is how we should conclude what you guys are doing here. We should give Mike, look at him, he's jonesing. He looks like somebody who's twitching cold turkey, spasming because he doesn't have his information that he needs to make a prop bet of some sort. Like, who's the Rams running back? Is it Henderson? Anderson? What's his name?
Henderson and Brown.
Henderson over 59.5. Mike Ryan had his eye on that as a prop bet. Congratulations. Were you watching the whole game hoping that he got to 64 or 65?
It was
right?
Set it and forget it, Dan. I watched something else. I knew Mina Kimes would come through for me.
What's the Bears-Saints line? I see that they're playing in the afternoon.
Well, but I don't think he wants a side. I think he wants
Think you want to give a side.
You don't want to give a side because you don't want
the
pressure.
I was asking you to exploit matchups, but if you want to actually give us a side, our audience will love that because that's really where you're 15-2.
Don't you run the risk of ruining the 15-2-1 if she gives one away for free?
Yeah, I was kind of hoping for a player prop.
She'll give you this one for free, but for $7.99, Mina Kimes.
Game of the year.
Game of the year. Lock of the year.
Oh, talk like a tout.
Do it like a tout.
Yeah.
Lock of the year.
Yeah. Lock of the year. Five stars.
I will stick a shampoo bottle in your man's ear. Does she not know what the touts
are? I haven't had time to think this through. I actually take the time.
I feel like
I'm not like a machine that you can just press a button.
We are getting so much filibustering here.
So much time.
Mina, we are just sitting here pulling shit out of your ass.
I'm not doing it.
We're just waiting for you to come up with the analysis you need.
Mina, just give me a f-ing prop. Just give me a f-ing prop.
No. You know what? And you might not get them this weekend with that attitude.